This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting February 7, 2008.
Is there anyone else that would like to bring anything to the assembly not on the agenda? All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ryan. On to announcements and reports. The first is a transit visualization system for bus announcements by Representative Rebecca Smith. I think that's what it says, right?
Okay, I spoke to Josh Cohen a few days ago about it, and basically it's a transportation system where students can view their bus, the bus system and the buses on the routes and everything online during real time. So you don't have to like wait outside and not know when your bus is coming. You can see it. You can see all the systems. There's a website. I went on it. I encourage all of you to go on it. I can probably put it up on the Blackboard site. Currently right now, this system is being used at Harvard, Yale, Emory, NC State, Auburn, and Alabama. And at NC State, in the library, they put flat screen TVs up to have all the bus systems. You can see where all the buses are all the time. You can also access it through your cell phone. So if you're not near a computer or in the library, you can do it that way too. So Josh Cohen really wants to get feedback on it, so if you guys can email me about it or have questions, just let me know. And I would love to give him feedback. So yeah, thank you.
Any questions for Rebecca? All right, moving on is the Ivy Council and Ivy Leadership Summit recap by Steve Matthews and Samantha Don.
Hey, guys. The summit was a huge success. We brought great speakers, a great time was had by all. I thought it was incredibly successful. I want to thank Samantha Don again. She basically did all the work for putting this together as a liaison.
Tracy,
so she deserves some serious thanks for coming up with all that work. The other end of that is I've actually just finished drafting a formal application for the council, which we've never had before, and I'm going to be bringing that to SLIC, which is the Student Leaders Something Conference this weekend, to try to recruit new members. You know, I'm going to be sending this out to leaders around the campus, try to build a delegation, because I can move forward. In other news, Columbia's kind of dropping the ball, and the conference might be coming here first week in April. I kind of found this out yesterday, so I'm trying to see if it's not too late to do that.
Any questions for Steve? Thanks. The next is a communications committee report by Vice President Natarajan.
Right. I just want to make a quick elections PR update. The communications committee met earlier this week and turned out a bunch of report cards. If anyone in the gallery is interested in learning, there's a stack in the back on that chair right there. I went around campus in the bitter cold report carding all the way. Also, I announced that the elections were happening in intro stats. I'll be doing AM 220 tomorrow, Gen 10, hopefully. Also, I asked the chair of the Concert Commission to give us a quick plug, so he's doing that in the G-Body meeting today. The email letting everyone know that elections are happening was sent out around 3:30, and as a side note, to all my devoted listeners, my radio show will not be happening tonight. Yeah, I know. Anyway, thank you very much.
Travesty. Next is UA update by Representative Basil.
Yeah, something really quick for everyone in the assembly. You all may have seen the scores and response to PJC, and there's a lot of contention about that.
Can you summarize it quickly, Chris?
Basically, Scorton accepted most of the changes that CJC proposed for the code of conduct, but changed about 10 of them. Most of them just had like caveats. Some of them were rejected outright. And a lot of faculty are upset about that. So we're going to be having an emergency meeting next week Personally, I don't have any problem with any of these changes. I talked to Andrew Wong about that, I guess, a little bit. He expressed some concerns about some of Scorpion's changes. If anyone else had any concerns, I guess just talk to me or Steve before next week, and we'll bring it up. So, thanks.
Any questions for Chris? Next is a charter test update by Parliamentarian Naza.
Okay, so I have a charter test that's now on Blackboard. Everybody take a look at it. It needs to be completed by the close of the meeting next week. And what did we say passing that? 70%. So if you have any questions, please let me know. You can't go back to it, so you have to do it all in one shot. And if you have this charter in front of you, you can do that part. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yeah.
What happens if it's down?
You have to go to the workshop on the chart. So I'm looking for pretty packed.
It's a good test. I want to thank Guy for making that. Are there any other announcements or reports? Are there any other additions to the agenda? All right, the first item on business of the day, which is why I think a lot of you are here, is the Internet Use Education by Tracy Matrano, the Director of IT Policy at Cornell. Tracy's here, right? Hi. Come on forward. Is there anyone else? I know we spoke to someone from Gannett who is going to come to this meeting. Is that person here? Guess not. Okay. So basically, thank you for coming, Tracy. This has been an ongoing issue at Cornell. I just want to be very clear that this was Vince Hartman's idea to bring Tracy and some other individuals. Ryan and I thought it was a great idea. Contrary to popular belief, we're not having this forum because I'm on it. We're talking more because of the attacks at other individuals and the Greek community. I am not performing for Slope Day, and I have not embezzled any funds from the Student Assembly. So I'd like to ask Tracy, why don't you take 10 minutes? I want to kind of limit this discussion. You're all going to have an opportunity to speak if you'd like. We're going to have Guy Monza go around, and he's going to take your name down. We'll do three community members speaking and then one SA member. Hopefully we can have this conversation about 45 minutes to an hour. We do have other things on the agenda. Whatever, I'm changing things up. So, Tracy, thank you for coming, and go ahead.
Thank you, Dave, and everyone for being here. I didn't prepare anything. I could talk to you contemporaneously about a few things, or really just opening up the questions. I guess, as I understand it from the administration perspective, from folks that come forward to some of us with concerns about this site in particular, and there have been other ones in the past, but this one seems to have risen the temperature level up to maybe a little bit higher than some of the previous ones. And the first question that has been asked is whether the Cornell Network should block the site. There have been other questions about other legal remedies. We're very glad to speak with the class of 2008 officers and committees to really talk about the issue, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here to talk with all of you or anyone who is behind me also about some of these issues. By way of introduction, TJ, I guess I would say, you know, technology is neither good nor bad.
Sure.
It's only how we use it. It's really important to think about social norms. It's really important to think about the law. Important to think about market models, and I think that market models play a very important role in this site, as well as other issues that I know are interesting to you. And so long as we keep all of these factors in mind, it helps us to analyze what is the best approach that we can take as individuals who may or may not be people who have been named or people who are naming. And you can think about what we would want to do as a student body in your part, as an administration, and my and my colleagues' part, and certainly what we would want to do as a university. You can imagine that the most important concern that we have from the administration and the faculty would be to do what is best in light of our mission to teach and to continue to do first-rate research and outreach that we do at this university. And so anything else that we do will always be considered in light of those missions. And why don't I just leave it there and open it up to any questions that you have.
Okay, before we go to the speakers list, I had a couple questions, and we spoke over email earlier this week. One of those questions, I think, is something a lot of people have. is the site, if we were to Google someone's name that happened to be on the site, is that searchable? Can we find that? And what's Juicy Campus's policy on letting search engines kind of crawl around the site?
I haven't done a full analysis of their policy, but it is my understanding that right now they are using the technology to inhibit Google crawlers to capture their pages. I think it's just a matter of record that in the United States and in the enforcement of the Federal Trade Commission, that sites that are used in order to for profit or to make money or to transact money must have a privacy policy, but that privacy policy is under no regulation of content. In other words, there are no rules about it. You simply must have one. So if your policy is I'm going to sell all of your personally identifiable information to the lowest bidder, that is perfectly acceptable under the law. You simply must state it. That's all. That's all that the FTC requires if you get a statement to it. So, my concern in answering that question is not to imply some false expectation that tomorrow morning they won't change, because there's nothing under the law that requires them to adhere to a policy that they have today.
And you're also a lawyer, correct?
I was trained as an attorney, and I'm a retired member of the New York State Bar. But I think of myself in many years of teaching more effectively.
Can Juicy Campus be held responsible for slander for providing a forum for individuals to post what they're posting?
Slander, you want to always think of in the algorithms that we learn in law school, it goes with speech, and so it would have to be something that I said here, you know, Tracy Matrano was a pedophile kind of thing. I couldn't do myself, I suppose. libel is for, think of letters, and defamation is for when it first works. Something that someone says about you and your character. Mm-hmm. I think the two areas of the law that might be on people's mind as an approach would be more in the line of defamation or libel. Defamation, you really have to show damages. Tracy Matrano was a pedophile, and as a result, I lost my job. If it's true, truth is a defense to a defendant. But if it is not true and I lost my job and other kinds of damages. And if I knew the person who had said it in a state court, I would bring an action to get damages for what had been done to me, and including punitive damage, like the emotional stress and emotional harm that has been done to me as well. My understanding of the site is that it is anonymous, and so a ready identification of those who might be held liable for defamation is.
All right, first speaker on the speaker's list is Representative Greenberg.
I guess my question is ultimately, like, you know, what are the consequences of the 6 months, 12 months, 18 months down the line where something said about a certain individual and you need that individual to take some sort of action on himself? Let's say, if I'm justified to focus on something there for a certain tax perpetrator, like something on his feet, so worse, maybe wake up in the morning to see that, you know, somebody killed himself. So my question is, you know, is Cornell considering preparing any action against these people? And if so, it seems to me like very simple solution to just be sort of some office, whether it's your office or another office, and contact you can't basically remove Cornell from the place of the university that approved this on their site.
I would say that the first thing that you talked about, and that is a concern that anything that is said on this site be a tipping point for someone who might otherwise be at risk for self-harm or harm to others. It's the first thought that any responsible administrator has, and I can tell you that that is the first thought of all the administrators with whom I have spoken. And I was glad to hear you say that perhaps someone from Gannett might be here. That would be great. And maybe they got tied up, but I just want to assure you that those resources are there. And for anyone who does just feel so hurt, damaged, upset, I think there are no words to use. We probably could all think of something that happened in our lives, whether it was at a playground when we were 6 years old, or, you know, I had someone write something on a school locker when I was in junior high that I still remember. And I can live my life happily since, but it's not something that many people can just fluff up. We remember those things. But for people for whom it is hurting them so particularly that they may do something that would be harmful to themselves or to others, well, certainly we would want them to take responsible action of reaching out and getting help. In terms of the liability the site might have, the law is now open to what the Internet is doing. You are living your generation and life of natives to the Internet, and the law is changing and maturing as we speak on many of these questions. I can tell you that in the recent cases where my state was involved in well-celebrated stories of bad occurrences of two teenagers who committed suicide, ostensibly as a result of being the victim of what's now being called cyberbullying or Internet bullying, in neither of those cases was MySpace sued. So based on the fact that we are in a common law system that relies on precedent, it doesn't look like precedent is moving that way. In terms of legislation, in the Communications Decency Act of 1996, you're online or want to write it down and look it up later, there's something called Section 230. And that provides immunity for ISPs, Internet Service Providers, or even online applications such as this one, for defamation and for libel. And the reason for that at the time was the fear that if they, those kinds of sites or entities like an ISP, became liable for anything and everything that someone else said about each other, that the Internet would never grow. Because there's always people willing to say something negative about somebody else. And so in order not to inhibit the progress of the Internet, which really has buoyed the American economy and certainly makes it part of the global network system, Congress, in their wisdom 18 years ago, thought it appropriate to give ISPs and service sites immunity in that area. We may see as a result of some of these cases an effort to have the law changed at the federal level or at the state level to begin to move on questions of defamation and libel in ways that perhaps we don't see in the law right now.
Okay. We're going to go to the community members to speak. I'd ask that if a community member does speak, please state your name and year for the record. Guy, who's the first person on the list? Gotcha.
I have Stacey Katz, class of 2008, and if anybody would like me on the speaker, please raise your hand.
Hi, my name is Stacey Katz, I'm a senior. I have taken interest in UC campus because of the fact that in the beginning, I'm a former leader of the degree system type thing, and in the beginning I saw all the different posts that were talking about the degree system, and I thought that it was the website was really working against everything the degree system is trying to do. And everything that panel, IFC, administration, the administration working with the IFC, that kind of thing, and I felt that with all the recruitment statistics that came out and on the website, all the sort of like speaking badly about other houses, that I personally was offended because I spent so much time working with my sorority that I just felt that this was so unnecessary and there had to be some way we could stop it. So from there, I then went to talk to so many different people about this in many different forums, and I learned that what I think is wrong about the site is actually wrong. That it's not the degree system that's most important, and it's not the fact that people are saying negative or positive things about different houses, but it's actually the individual attacks is what we really have to be worried about. Because if we're worrying about students' mental health, like saying that your sorority is not great or your fraternity is not great is not something that's going to push someone over the edge, but it's more that saying something really like negative about their character is something that can really like offend them, can affect their future professional careers, etc. So from there, I spoke to a lot of different people about it. I met with my business law professor, who is a lawyer, and had an entire discussion with her about it. I read all the terms and conditions on the website, and we did find out that they are tracking your IP address, which people are posting. So while it's anonymously, they're not saying that they're necessarily tracking and looking after everybody's IP address, but like they can find out if need be. So I think that's an important message that we need to deliver, because if people are doing this from their home computers, obviously that could be a problem for you then. I also then got into the question of why Cornell can't necessarily block the site, which is something that I was like, I, you know, that's something that I definitely wanted to ask about. But I went through everything with my business law professor. Basically, like, she came to the same conclusion, but I think that there's, like, liability is not, like, we can't go after them for anything in that sort of way. So I also received an email that was forwarded by someone who responded to their website and said, like, there is something on here about me and it's not true and I'd like it taken down. And they send back a generic email, basically saying, like, you cannot respond to this email unless you are a lawyer or something in that profession. So they basically said in their email that their, like, status in the situation is that they say that you can't put anything defamatory on the website. So that's what they say. However, then they say that defamatory comments are opinions. So basically that's where they cover themselves, by they're saying the fact that, like, if I say that you're flawed, like, that's my opinion, which doesn't make any sense to me. So essentially, the reason I wanted to come is because I've exhausted all different options about this. Like, I just think that the website is something that really could drive people who are having problems with their mental health over the edge. And I think it's great that Finet is something that is being involved in this and they will help people, but I don't think that people are necessarily going to be as open as they should be about going to Finet and seeking help if they need to. So, after I have talked about this for now a week, my ending conclusion is that I think that somehow, like, I guess this is that forum, that somehow the FA and the Cornell administration need to work together towards the only common goal really being that we want to make sure that every, like, because we both all agree that we want to keep students' mental health, like, up there. Like, Cornell is a rigorous institution, like, people already have enough stress in their plate, and this is really not up to their age. So, somehow, if we can get the message out to the website to track your IPN, somehow if I can find out about the blocking of the site, that kind of thing, I just wanted to put all of that information.
Yeah, and thank you for doing all that research. Tracy, do you want to respond to that? And can you start with, can Cornell block the site?
Well, technically, I suppose we can do anything, but to do so would be a violation of our own policies that prohibits the monitoring of content as a practice. And certainly blocking would be against the values that underpin Cornell's internet service to a research, teaching, and outreach institution. I think there are more reasons than just standing on the formality of policy, however. First of all, if you walked over to Starbucks and went on and on, whatever, they're probably on Time Warner or something like that, you would be on it. I mean, I think blocking it would be a very limited value. Cornell may seem like all of your life right now, but there is a lot of outside right there. All of the outside, we can't block all of the outside world. We can't block that site to the rest of the world. We will only be able to block it on our network space, which, you know, I mean, IT addresses in the residential halls and the administration offices and faculty offices and that kind of thing. I certainly appreciate why someone would want it, but I think all things being equal, that probably is not such a great idea, both given the mission of the institution, favoring free speech, but more importantly, because it wouldn't really solve the problem of keeping the site off of the internet, which is what I think people are thinking when they're saying block the site. In terms of legal remedies, I think that it would be an interesting question to ask University Council, which I am not, whether or not they are concerned about their trademark and or reputation in such a way that they would want to take action. I think that it would be very interesting for individuals to get together to perhaps pay the legal costs to bring a variety of suits, defamation, perhaps being one kind of claim, that would at least kick off the kind of litigation whereby they would fall under the rules of discovery that might cause them, whether how long they keep those IP, that sort of long records is one question. I would wonder if they're advertising themselves as an anonymous site, whether they don't recognize that they are a little less anonymous if they keep those logs, because not in every case, but in some cases they are traceable back to a person, so that hardly seems anonymous to me. Yeah. So there are a number of things that individually or collectively might want to do with respect to the site, and
Stacey, we were in a meeting on Monday and we spoke a lot about what the Greek community's response could potentially be. Can you talk a little bit about what some sororities, I know I'm not sure of any fraternities doing this, but what sororities are doing to kind of combat Juicy Campus?
Okay, just from a meeting that we did have on Monday, the head of the panel at the council is going to say that she would go to all the different presidents and sororities, basically encourage them not to look at the site as a part, but really encourage them to not post on the site at all, because people are looking to see if their name is on it, so that's a bit of a hard thing to monitor. But if it seems a lot of the posting in the beginning were from Greek people in the Greek system by people in the Greek system. That's just the way it all seems. So now I think it's become a little more individual, but we are hoping that by saying, like, really encouraging it in the Greek system, that, like, nick some of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Stacey, thanks for everything. Next speaker, Guy. Can you talk about this latest kind of trend of anonymous posting that you were talking about on Monday? And do you think Juicy Campus is something of a fad, or will it kind of, I mean, there have been other sites that are similar to this. Do you think these things will continue?
I mean, I'm not like the overall authority, but I'm a communication major, and I also study relational aggression, so this is definitely something that's really of interest to me. But the fact that anytime something's anonymous is what can kind of take it to the next level, because the other thing is not to get too theoretical. But people on this website might not even be who they are and saying their actual thoughts. When it's anonymous, it allows you to role play. So people could be taking on identities that they're really not. So you can go on any day and be five different people and make five different comments, and it doesn't matter. So that's what can kind of drive it. For all we know, there could be 10 people commenting on the site, but they're the ones who are saying everything. And that's what being anonymous does. And then when you compound the fact that it's anonymous, like we were talking about earlier, legally with defamation and all of that, there's no one to trace it back to. So it'll just, people can continue to get more hurt. And then you don't know what their reaction will be, if their reaction is going to be go on the site and do it to somebody else. Because that's like what happens. It happens in relational aggression. You look at a movie like Mean Girls, it happens. Every TV show. It's kind of, it's a cycle, and it'll keep going.
I also think it's important to note there's an editorial in the Sun, actually two editorials in the Sun today, but one of them talked, it was a letter from a student who said that she went on UC campus, and she was one of the first people that was on there, and she took a story, posted on it 40 times, and kept clicking refresh and, on the Juicy button, and made it one of the juiciest stories on UC campus. So I think that's something also important to note, that it could be a very limited amount of individuals that are actually doing this. Tracy, do you want to respond to anything Nikki has said? Thanks, Nikki.
I think what Nikki said is really important, and when I began by saying we need to think about this in terms of social norms and market and other areas, that really fits right into it. My personal opinion is that we're not getting this without oxygen in the body. But I know that when you're 18 to 21, you know, things are exciting, and so that might not necessarily be a realistic perspective. On the other hand, it is very important to recognize that this site is a for-profit site. They want to be recognized. They are on an advertising model like Google, like Facebook, and anything else, and they would love to be, not the next Facebook, but the extension of their business model per se, but they would love to be embraced by the collegiate community of this country, if not the world, in the same way or similar way that Facebook, for example, has been embraced. And with that would come the gazillions of dollars that now flow to the founders of Facebook. So if you want to contribute to their pension fund, I want it frequently and often. But I do believe that the easiest way for this site to die is for people to stop visiting.
Guy, another speaker from the community, and then we'll go to a couple SA members.
Can you request to that?
Yeah, no, what's your name? What?
Give it to us. Give it to us.
I guess the first thing that I want to bring up is that to be our college, my name is Katie Neal. I'm class of 2009. I'm the president of the Tennis Association. The first thing to call out to Tennis is if you are being personally attacked, I know there was an instance where someone's personal information, including their cell phone number, was put up on the site, and they did call and was taken down. So that's something to keep in mind for everyone. If you are on there, like, make sure you place that call like, immediately so that they can find you if they have that capability. Second, I guess I'm really worried about the impact of this on chapters. I wasn't at the meeting on Monday night, but I heard that it got very emotional because there are a lot of sorority chapters here at Cornell that are really struggling to change their image, my own chapter included, and I think that this is setting all those chapters back like 5 years and all the work that they're doing because the stereotypes that are up there are very old. A lot of them are old and they're not current anymore, and it's just really difficult for women in a chapter to be labeled as something, which most of them aren't. And I think that does affect them personally, and it makes them embarrassed for their letters, which should not be happening at Cornell. Next, I guess this, in terms of the grief system as a whole, we've been working really hard at getting more positive publicity out there, and it's something that's one of our major goals for this year, but right now this website is making it very difficult for us to do that because this is what everyone at Cornell is looking at, and this is their perception of the system right now, and that's not going to bode well for recruitment next year. And I guess my main thing is that I want this to die out by the end of the semester so that when the freshmen come in next year, this isn't the website they're looking at for their information about the grief system. Because I think any reasonable freshman who reads that website right now probably wouldn't be so keen on going to recruitment because they don't want to be labeled by their letters. Like, they want to join the grief system to make friends and have a great social life and do philanthropy, but that website is not portraying that right now. And I guess my main thing that's going on in the Aspen Athletic Association is a number of tackers have taken action amongst themselves where they've banned their tackler members from using the website, and if a tackler member is caught using the website, whether or not it's post something positive or negative, they're being brought to keep before the tackler standards board. And then as a panel association, at our first president's meeting, we're going to be drafting a contract for all 12 presidents to sign that just says that they will do what they can to stop the tackler members from using the website. I mean, that's basically the only response that we can see right now. Most of the sororities have already taken this upon themselves to stop their members from using it, and so now we're sort of just waiting on the rest of the group.
Thanks, Katie. We're going to go to some SA members now. The first is Vice President Lamb.
Thank you to all the community members that have contributed, Nikki, to bring us all together on the same page. But I wanted to thank you because you addressed an important concern. I think the problem was at the beginning of this meeting and at the beginning of the week, a lot of leaders on campus who wanted to be proactive about this were frustrated, didn't know where to exert their activity and their energy. So it seems to me, after hearing from Ms. McConnell, thank you again, and other group leaders and so on and so forth, that we should really be focusing our efforts within our communities, within the social communities of our campus. And so the Panhellenic Association's example of what they're doing, I think, is a great example. And I think we should all take examples like that to get back to our community and just really diffuse this as much as we can. And I mean, if you have anything to respond to that, correct me if I'm wrong, if that's how I've been interpreting the sentiment. So for the sake of, you know, just the rest of the conversation, I guess I would encourage anyone else to provide other examples like that that, you know, we can take and bring to our respective communities. So again, thank you all.
We're actually going to go to SA members. Hi.
Hi. Well, a couple of things that concern me are, even if we are choosing IP addresses, everyone's using computer labs, so I mean, it is really very easy to be anonymous, and I don't necessarily know that it will die out. Even if people do, you know, sign a contract, things like that, it would really go one of two ways. And if you can, you know, go into a search engine like Google and find Rebecca Stein, you know, does drugs or something like that, then that could really be very damaging, both to the university and to the community. I also know of a situation in which a girl had a bunch of terrible, terrible things said about her. She contacted the website, and they essentially responded, reevaluate your position or deal with it, that they would not remove the post. So, I mean, hopefully this phone call incident happened after, and they are evolving and becoming better, but it could be going in either direction. The other thing I actually wanted to ask you was if we can, as a university, be held liable should someone, you know, say, I killed myself because the juicy campus pushed me off the edge, or should, you know, an expert testify that this person was on the edge and it's very possible that, you know, just pushed him over. Because we are addressing this now as a university. We have the minutes. We're saying this is a huge problem. We're even addressing the fact that it could push somebody over the edge. If we don't do anything as a university, what could the consequences be?
Well, I should hesitate to answer for university council, but I would say that the university is doing a lot.
Oh, no, I was saying if we do opt to just screw up, we'll let it die out. And from that perspective, we could actually launch some sort of campaign and say, as a university, it's our obligation to do this, which would sort of be a back door if we are worried about violating our own policies or things like that. I mean, if we did somehow evaluate the general climate on campus, and this is what the students wanted.
I think the social norms aspect of how to approach this is personal. Best approach. In terms of individuals, as a community, to say that Ms. Cornelling is beneath the dignity to participate in this kind of discourse, I think is a statement that speaks for itself. And for anyone who really has enough discipline or courage to turn away then from something that otherwise is very attractive, probably is, you'll excuse a 49-year-old person saying this, a lesson in character. But having said that, I will then go on to say that for individuals who have had material courage about that, if in any way they do become public on the internet in the sense of available by ways to balance the rights of an individual to control what is being said about them. In this new medium that has scale and scope that was not part of what our common law with respect to defamation and libel addressed. And so for you young lawyers and politicians out there, this might be an opportunity to suggest that both the state and federal level that there be privacy laws available generated by our legislature that would allow a process whereby a person could say that they wanted certain personally identifiable or even personal information about them. It would be weighed, I'm sure, in American law against free speech, and despite having the circular reasoning about if my opinion is defamation, defamation is my opinion. But I think it is a conversation well worth having in American society and in American law. But technology is so pervasive, it certainly has changed the scope of how we think about some of the traditional forms, such as defamation. That was a very academic answer. I'm not sure that it really addressed your concern. But I did want to just simply make clear that the law is still a living thing in this country, and you should make use of it, especially people with the resources, intelligence, discipline, and learning that you all get by being citizens.
Guy. Let's take two this time.
Marley assessment in class of 2010.
Made by Cornell students about, you know, Jewish people or African
is extremely degrading. And to be completely honest, making Cornell University look very bad and it's very ignorant and it's not very good for our reputation in following our mission statement. And in addition to that, I know that you have said, you know, if any of us want to, you know, become lawyers, we should kind of take a stand and not use, you know, information on the internet to judge possible candidates for jobs. But the fact of the matter is we're talking about now, and while the stuff on this website is not searchable via Google, the website does not involve any need for passwords, and anybody can go onto this website. So who's to say that an employer can't go onto a website, click Cornell, if their possible candidate is from Cornell, search their name, and then all of a sudden come up with all this information. And while we'd like to think that maybe they wouldn't take into consideration some of these things being said, it is very hard not to. And while hopefully in years to come there will be efforts made for privacy laws and for things like that not to be taken into consideration, we have to speak about now and take a more active approach than a reactive approach. Whereas having good net services available for students who, you know, are almost pushed over the edge or truly hurt by this is a great tool. It's more of a reactive approach than an active approach. And I think that at this point in time, I understand that it's a major problem with the internet. It is something that probably Cornell University as a whole is big and as prestigious as we are, can't eliminate in total. But I think taking small baby steps in the right direction, whether it be blocking it on the internet server or doing something else, would probably be the best. Because even if you block it on the Cornell server, that would eliminate hundreds or maybe thousands of people at Cornell from looking at the website. And then hopefully, little by little, they die down.
Okay. Thank you. One more speaker guy from the community. Thanks, girls.
Grayson Farner, class 2008. Okay. So I'm not going to rehash much of what you said. A lot of valuable points you brought up. So I guess I would suggest a strategy for Cornell University. We're supposed to be having more dignity than to look at these sites because, frankly, I looked at it after seeing ads on Facebook for about a month. And honestly, it's not juicy, it's salty and vindictive. It's not good for campus. And I think one approach that hasn't been discussed yet is to sort of go to Facebook. Facebook is the only reason I knew about this site. Facebook, I think, is the only reason a lot of you have heard about this site. The company itself is sort of facing its own battle right now between privacy and profits or interest. And it's very concerned about these issues. And I think what we have to do simply is to send emails to them and encourage our friends at other schools to do the same, because I think it'll really kick the teeth out of this sort of movement, because like a lot of people have said, I completely agree with Nikki. We shouldn't have an overt response, because I think that'll draw more attention, it'll draw more people into this type of thing than before exotic, I guess. But I think each of us, if we're concerned about this issue, we should send emails to Facebook and basically tell them, listen, my membership in your company is going to continue based on how much I feel that you respect my privacy, and sponsoring and allowing companies like Juicy to advertise goes directly against us. I think that's something you should be aware. And if half the people in this room do that, when, I don't know, for any issue, like I keep wanting to email Facebook, that would be an enormous response. I think it would really shut them down. And at other schools, we can encourage our friends to do this as well, and I think it would be an appropriate response. So.
Thanks, Grayson. That's a good idea. We're going to go to two SA members now, Vice President Gay.
Thanks, CJ. Grayson, that's a great idea. And I think that fits in well with Tracy's market approach to solving a lot of these issues. I appreciate everything that's been said, but obviously a lot of this is very unsatisfying to people because they really have no recourse. This discussion centers around personal responsibility and it's called these norms. But unfortunately, obviously people will still abuse the service. So my question is if that is true that they are somewhere recording IP addresses, so if off campus that will be you and it could be technically traced back to you. It seems like the biggest outlet for people that still abuse this anonymous site would be through computer labs. Has there ever been any discussion about requiring people to sign on to use computers? And so it would be time stamped with your net ID. And so that would take away from the community aspect of open computer labs. However, that would seem like one tangible step to address this anonymous posting from sites all around campus.
Well, as you well know, you can go off campus and then but you go right into the thick of a debate that we had here a few years ago when we were discussing what is known as University Policy 5.7 Network Registry. And that registry requires the registration of all of the hosts, computers, devices connected to the Cornell network. And there were many people at this time that said that they opposed that policy because they believed that one of the great qualities of the internet was the ability to post anonymously. And I think that they were not thinking of circumstances like this where individual people are hurt, but they were thinking more in terms of political speech, being able to say something that, whether it be in opposition to university policy or whether it be in opposition to a big T policy in American society, that they would feel more free to say it if they could say it enough. And that remains a very important question, I think, in a society that values free speech. So, to go back to your specific question, well, in ResNet, we know people's IP addresses because they're static. And when you're on a wireless system, we know who the user is because you have to register your MAC address.
Correct.
Public labs do offer an opportunity for people to communicate anonymously. I suppose that issue could be raised, but I can tell you the minute it is, you're going to have most of the librarians, a lot of IT people, a flock of faculty in here, probably saying something in the realm of what I began with. That is that there should be some avenue for a person to be able to speak freely and anonymously. And if we were to allow a despicable representation of people to be the cause of shutting down political free speech, I think we would be giving sites like Jiffy Campus far more power than they should.
Okay. Yeah, certainly a discussion that needs to balance those two options. And just my last quick question. You had mentioned the copyright or trademark possibility of the university trademark if the council does pursue that. Is that something that's been discussed at all, or is that?
It's a theory. It came up at 2008 class meeting. I have forwarded that query on to council's office and look forward to hearing from them. And certainly send it any response back to both Ken and TJ as a way to communicate with them.
Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna, for those questions. Next is Representative McGovern.
Okay. I wanted to start out by saying I agree with a lot of what's been said here, that this site obviously is kind of pathetic and embarrassing to the people who are using it and posting on it. Some of the things that are said are really degrading and disgusting. That seems kind of like a general attitude. But the point about infringement upon speech, I think, is a really important one. And also the fact that by blocking the site, which doesn't really seem like a proposal, but something that some people might be in favor of, we're also being really infantilizing to our peers who are our age, who have the same judgment that we do. So I think that's also a major issue that I would really disagree with. And another important point is that gossip happens without just websites. This website is being given a lot of weight and a lot of power. But these perceptions of some members of the Greek community and some other members who gossip frequently, like those were still here before this website ever came to be, before anyone even logged onto the website. So that's, I don't think this website is the point that we need to just be attacking. I think one point that was brought up by a community member was a really good one, that small groups should internally be doing a lot to combat this issue, not just this issue of this website, but to combat issues of racism, discrimination, homophobia, those kind of things that are on the website. These are not just juicycampus.com issues, these are campus issues at large. So I agree, I think this should really be a small group effort, an internal effort in the group community, in organizations, in the student assembly, what we're doing right now. I think that's really the method to combat this issue, not blocking a website. And being the potential scolding of the campus, I don't think that's really a great idea. So all my questions have been answered, but that was my point. And thank you for coming, and thanks everyone for speaking.
The time now is 5:45, and in the beginning of the debate I said 45 minutes. Vice President Lavin has motioned to extend the discussion by until 6:15, which is another half an hour. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Representative Salem, would you like to discuss your dissent?
I mean, I'm on the speaker's list, and I did want to speak, but I do appreciate people coming to speak about this. But this won't be the last time we discuss it. I think that giving it 45 minutes was a good judgment call from the chair, and I would ask the chair to stick by that decision. I think we have discussed the point over and over, and I think that waiting for the decision of the University Council, then maybe we can proceed. Otherwise, now we're just reiterating what we said, which is that this site is despicable and we shouldn't have it. But I don't think we should extend it for half an hour. But ask the chair to just keep his decision.
Very well. I respect that. I am going to let it be a decision of the Assembly. All in favor of extending discussion until 6:15 p.m.
How many people are left in the community?
How many people are on the speaker's list, Guy? And I have 5 SA members on my speaker's list. All in favor of extending, what's that?
What are you going to limit the time to?
It's 6.
The speaking time to these 4 people.
I can begin doing that. We can do that to a minute if you want to.
A minute, I will draw my dissent.
Representative Salem has withdrawn his dissent. Is there any dissent to the motion? Seeing none, as chair, I will limit speakers to 1 minute. We will go to the speakers list from Guy. We'll go to 3 speakers now. Please limit your comments to 1 minute. If we deem it warrant to extend your time, an assembly member will motion to do that, or I will at the discretion of the chair. Go ahead, Guy.
Hello. I will start out by saying that, as we all know, you guys are despicable. However, there are some that can be taken to go against this website. Mainly, as was stated earlier, it could just be a handful of people who are doing this. The Greek community should organize not to resist this site, but rather to hold on to it, start posting their own rhetoric that is pro-Greek community, not necessarily against it or against anyone within the Greek community. And then they can just refresh those pages so those stay near the front, or even through the use of bots and other internet protocols, just keep
10 seconds.
Refreshing that.
All right. Thank you. Guy, next speaker. That is a good idea, though. Thanks.
Class of 2009.
Speaker's time has expired. Take another 30 seconds, go ahead. Thank you. Guy, next speaker.
Why should you let it affect you this much? If people want to be free, they're going to go Greek, regardless of what people say about the particular group they want to pledge. I just think that that this is a really horrible way to end their time that could be used on another issue. And I think that you're just fanning the flames with like court cases and like banning it in like the And the last, like, no one in my community has heard of Gypsy Campus. No one goes on. It's on Facebook. But we ignore it. I just think that this is really a horrible way to end this time.
We're going to go to the essay speakers list now. I'd ask that if you are on the speakers list and you plan on saying something that was already said for the sake of the debate and the discussion, please refrain from saying that. We'll go to two essay members now. First is Asa Craig.
I'd like to first thank you all for coming. I just have one quick question. What would happen in the case of threats made on the site?
Well, threats that are imminent and could cause imminent harm are not protected by free speech. And so I suppose one would then want to call law enforcement and ask them to do something. And of course, free speech as a constitutional matter only limits the government. And so one would say that they have a right to ask them to remove that if indeed they thought it would cause imminent harm to somebody. And then it would be up to law enforcement.
Matt.
Thank you. I was going to move myself from the speakers because most of what I was going to say has already been said, but the issue of computer lab was brought up, and I wanted to speak about that really briefly because I am a supervisor for the year's lab, which is right, which is probably the highest traffic of all of our labs on campus. Just really briefly, I think that, about computer labs, our computer labs are public, we use Ghost software, and we don't have the server capability to have each person sign on and give them their own server space. And we don't block it in computer labs because they are public. They do have a main academic purpose, but people can use them for whatever they deem necessary as long as it's appropriate. Meaning like you don't run them into pornography websites, et cetera, stuff like that. That being said, I would just urge people to work for appropriate action that doesn't make it more tantalizing, like blocking it on campus would make it all the more tantalizing and juicy, if you will, to go somewhere where you can get access to it to see what's on there. I would ask appropriate solutions like what Ashley advocated, like what people were supposed to do with community acts, work with it inside your communities, and perhaps go to the university council if freeze your students' employment status or the university's character is being affected. I think those are the types of solutions.
Speaker's time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you, Masek. Representative Coombs.
Sure. Very quickly. I just want to say that I agree with 100% Representative McGovern and what Representative Geary just said. I think it would be any good blocking the site. One thing is everybody who had a computer off campus would probably be plagued by other friends wanting to look and check. I think it actually just increased people's nervousness and concern. It would, because if they were on campus, they could check what was going on there, etc. I think that, and just as being one final point, when people talk about this as compromising the purpose of our computer labs to allow this, be compromising the purpose of our Constitution if we block it, because exactly what Ms. Petrano just said about blocking it for that purpose, like, we're not China. And fundamentally, like, this is, like, there is no gatekeeper. I think this is basically like a certain blonde conservative pundit I see on TV from time to time.
Now.
9/11 for those enjoying
the other 20 seconds left.
Fundamentally, this attention is just fanning those flames. Let's just let it die. I would encourage also campus newspapers, et cetera, just don't talk about it. Because there are a lot of people like the gentleman who spoke earlier who haven't heard about it. They might see it as a newspaper, get interested. Just let it die.
Speaker's time has expired. Guy, three community members, please.
Point of information, there was one person left on the first speaker's list of the community.
Other people.
On the first.
Leave that, okay.
David Lavender, Class 2008.
Actually, I went on the old campus for the first time just a few days ago before the sponsor started giving them all that publicity. And I was really curious to see how popular it was with each of the items. So I went and looked at the page counts of posts, and each page represents about 20 posts. Brown on had about half a page, Princeton was the second most downloaded with 4 pages. And we're now at 31 feet, so I don't think the site is involved in there.
So noted. Guy?
just in Travia Pastuta's name.
Time suspended by 30 seconds. Oh, that's it. Okay. One more guy. One more. Welcome to the club.
Get attention, but you can be aggressive in a more of a silent way, as some of the people, a community member share that you should just not try not to mention the website. Try to avoid advertising the website. If you do see it put on, tell them to be like, crap, you know, it's not worth spending time on. But I definitely agree we should try to keep this, you know, not spread it. Let it die down as Mr. Carl said, and yeah, cut the option instead. Thank you.
Carly. Greenberg, pay attention. Get the mic.
Hi. Sorry, I don't want to make this conversation go on any longer. But I did want to just quickly respond to one of the community member suggestions that we write positive comments on the site. I think it's been made clear that going to the site is you know, promoting the gossip and just, you know, giving more ammunition for people to fire back and say something negative. So I think that's a very bad idea. And I just wanted to make sure that people didn't do that.
Guy, how many people are on your speakers list? Okay. We'll take
it. I've already went through the chair 10 discussion since it's just the second speaker's list and we spent enough time on
it. I agree. We won't vote that. There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent?
Motion.
Seeing no dissent, we are going to end discussion. Thank you all for coming. We do appreciate it. If you do want to follow up with your respective representatives, I think we can be in touch. We will get the word out there. I hope assembly members will respond to this accordingly, taking some of the advice and ideas that have been proposed. But thank you all for coming. And thank you, Professor Vetrano. We really do appreciate your continued interest. Next item on business of the day is the approval of the CU Tonight Constitution and Commissioners. I want to thank CU Tonight for sticking around and being here. And thank you, Guy, for putting that speakers list together. That was very organized and effective. Okay, so I believe you should have the CU Tonight Constitution in front of you, and there's a list of commissioners right here. I'm going to let the group have, in the interest of time, 5 minutes. Why don't you discuss the changes that have been made to the Constitution, kind of give an overview on the selection process and the makeup of the folks on the commissioner list, and then we'll move into a discussion and proceed accordingly. So go ahead. Thank you for coming.
So for the new commissioners, our application process is that
at this point, we'll open up the first speakers list. First is Representative A. Salem.
I think the SA liaison thing is probably required because you guys are 5 months under group. So I think that discussion over removal would be a problem.
with that said, I called the question on the Constitution.
What was that?
Called the question on the Constitution.
There was a called question. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Please take 30 seconds and express your dissent.
I just have a quick question about the name, because it says the committee of the student assembly, when you cross it out, there shouldn't be
okay. You can just explain. Okay. So at this point, we will vote on whether or not we're going to call the question. So if everyone in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Pod, please. All opposed? And an extension. Steve, is that your hand? Okay, that passes. So at this point, we will call the question. We can just do a hand raise for this one. Okay, so all in favor of approving to you tonight's commission and constitution changes, please raise your hand. All opposed? Any extensions? All right. That passes. 16-0-1.
Thank you for coming. Next item, do we approve the commissioners too? Mm-hmm. Okay. Next item on business of the day. Business of the day is finished. Resolution 12, the direct election of the FDA president and EVP by Representatives Hartman and Coombs. Speakers have 5 minutes to go over, and then I'm sure a lot of things will get at in questions. Okay.
Obviously we're pleased to bring this from the assembly last week. The only change we made one rhetorical change on the first whereas clause. So fundamentally, there's been a lot of discussion about this. Just to kind of go over again what it would actually do. This would change the SA charter. Right now, there are the 8 at-large seats. This would set 2 of them. This would establish a president and an executive vice president seat. So people who would choose to run for that seat, either one would be running, in effect, not only for the at-large seat, but for the office. It would automatically send it to the office. A point that was brought up last week was we would just be taking the highest vote getters from the at-large seats in general. No, that's because there might be someone who's running at large who may not want to be president, but may actually get more votes than the presidential candidate. We only want somebody to take on the job who wants to take on the job, obviously. So those two seats are separate. We believe fundamentally that this is the way it should be, that people who run for president, while there is a risk involved, personally, I take heart from a guy, I don't know if he's still here, but Grayson Parker, who spoke earlier, ran for student trustee, did not win, and has since come to almost every SA meeting we have. He's involved heavily with the Ivy Council, with the alumni, helps raise money for. He stayed active. We believe that if there were candidates who ran for president and lost, well, first of all, there would be a self-selection process. No one would want to run for president or vice president if they were not relatively sure they had a good chance of winning. So it would be self-selecting, good candidates that had a very good chance of winning. But if there were candidates who lost, that does not mean that we're precluding them from being involved civically on campus. Like I said, I think that's great as an example that I look to. Another proposal was to have separate elections.
2 minutes.
I think fundamentally, if anyone will remember, and I'm just going to use him as an example because he's the one guy sitting here if I remember. When Representative Lavin and his year ran for, this is some data for you. When they went freshman year, there was a mistake in the tabulations of votes. So they had to revote, and the TJ here as well. election turnout declined dramatically. I believe everybody in that year would have attested to that. Any proposal like that would, I think that's fundamentally, we need to take those things into account. We think that, as we say in the third world excellence, those who are to speak for the people are best chosen by the people. And fundamentally, we're playing catch up right now with our peers in the Ivy League. We think that it's valuable and it's right for Cornell to join the rest of the ancient age, as it were, and allowing the student body, Ivy League students,
1 minute,
to choose their spokespeople. And I think we would be pleased to take your questions. Spencer, do you have anything to add?
Okay, unlike last time, in which discussion is only limited to questions, you may debate or ask a question of the group. Please direct your comments to the chair. Basil. And speakers are limited to 2 minutes now. If we have to change that, then we will.
All right, I'm definitely supportive of this resolution principle. The only thing that concerns me a little bit about voting for it is the fact that all due respect to CJ, but the president's position in and of itself is more sort of an administrative position. He's keeping tabs in the meeting, he's giving everyone 2 minutes to speak, he's telling them to shut up for 2 minutes. And he's doing things like, organizing administration officials to come today if they have.
Gotcha.
And it very much is an internal position, for the most part. As Representative Coombs and Harper said, there are circumstances in which, CJ is speaking for students as a president, and taking the position of students for, toward the administration, in which case I definitely think that student input is important. But I still think that there should be more safeguards in place that are in the current resolution about, who can run, whether, some of the experience required, or whether, certain
1 minute.
Freshmen, whether freshmen can run. As someone who, we really, on the assembly, need internally to keep things under control, just day to day in meetings. So that's my concern with the resolution as it stands right now, is that yes, having a direct election would make the position much more valid, I guess, in terms of speaking for students, but might severely potentially detract from the president's ability to run a meeting. I guess all assembly members don't think about that in voting.
There are 20 seconds left to speak sponsors.
Sure. Fundamentally, I would agree with Representative Basil 100% if that was the way it was. I think that the presidency was intended to be that way. I think that it hasn't historically been that way. The administration looks to student opinion. When I was EDP last year, there's leadership breakfast that the president and EDP go to. The administration looks to the president, newspapers look to the president, the student body looks to the president. He's not merely an administrative official, he's the spokesman, and de facto spokesman.
Speaker's time has expired. Vice President Gek.
But I'd like to point out
that
the speakers too.
Oh, yeah, we will. Speakers, yeah. They'll.
Thanks, guys. I think this is a great initiative, and it's one of the most notable steps that we can take to actually bring about some reforms in the assembly system. First, I'd like to welcome all members of Chancery. I'm glad, new and old. I'm glad to see you guys are taking such an interest in this issue. And just to comment on a couple things, my only concern that I specifically expressed last week was, why don't you give an outlet for the people who don't, if there's more than two people who run a position, to actually serve on the assembly? Because there really is, you are effectively precluding them from an active involvement. Sure, they can be on a committee. Certainly, they can be like Grayson and dedicate a lot of time. However, they certainly can't take as active a role as they would like to. So I would ask, why wouldn't you be amenable to putting something in there where you can run for these seats and you have to designate that you are interested in running for president and EVP. However,
1 minute.
You can still, that would be a separate portion of the ballot. So you can still be running for your regular seats. Like Mark, for example, when we campaigned on your behalf for 2-3 hours, you and Sarah Boxer, 2 years ago, if you and Sarah had both lost to Kwame Cornell for president, we would have lost many years of expertise. And Sarah had spent her entire time there. That would have been a lot of lost knowledge that you couldn't regain. Sure, so you could serve on the committees. However, it wouldn't be in the same capacity. So I strongly support this idea of having direct election. I think it's great.
But I would just like to see some way, some recourse for people who lose to still maintain this active involvement like we are as voting members.
10 seconds left.
As I said in the past, this is a resolution that we brought forward. If the voting members would like to make an amendment, there are no friendly amendments. And if Adam Day or any of the members would like to make amendments, we encourage
them. Ashley McGovern.
Just as a comment to Representative Arvis, I don't care, okay. I think people can, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to that amendment, although you haven't proposed it, but I think also we should let people decide for themselves whether or not they think that running for president or vice president is worth possibly forfeiting their position. So I don't think we should strike it down just because that amendment might not be in there. I totally agree with this resolution. I think it's really great. I think in terms of accountability to the student body, electing a direct president and vice president is really important. And I may not have specific data, but I think it will definitely increase participation, not only in the president and vice president position, but in the overall election. And I think that's it. Oh, also, in terms of prerequisites for experience, I think we should let the students decide who's capable of being president and vice president. We don't have any prerequisites for being here. I think we should leave it up to them.
There are 50 seconds left, Mark.
Yeah, I think fundamentally, it's all about a matter of we need to let the students decide and the candidates themselves decide what they value. If they're willing to that risk there. For instance, you know, not to shine a little technical, but you know, like when I applied to Cornell, with this rural Southern valedictorian that was apparently what all the Ivies were looking for, I applied to early decision. I mean, that was a risk. Like I valued this university enough, I was willing to give up any other offers I got to go here. I think that people need to take risks, and this would serve as a self-selecting process. Only people who could viably win would run instead of win.
So I also want to say that we can't trust our own constituents, an Ivy League university, Cornell students, to determine if a candidate is capable of...
Speaker's time has expired. Rebecca's time.
Hi. I think that in sentiment, like Vice President Gates said, that this is a good idea. However, there are definite requirements for being president. For instance, if President Clinton had no understanding of parliamentary procedure, he could not effectively be the chair. If someone has no experience with the assembly, that doesn't necessarily mean that person will understand the charter or be able to work with the other members of the assembly effectively. And I really think that it is detrimental to the student assembly to say that if somebody runs for president and loses, that person is no longer able to be on the assembly. Anyone who is willing to run for president is an extraordinarily dedicated individual. It is a hard and thankless job. And, I mean, if we have two people who are willing to do that, then those are two people that we want on the student assembly. We don't want to lose one just because we get fewer votes. I think that there are a number of amendments which could make this a really great resolution and a good step to the future. But
1 minute.
To even step forth and try and amend it as it is now, I don't think would be a possibility. I think that we would need to go home, write up amendments, maybe even scrap the entire resolution and start over. There needs to be qualifications. There needs to be safeguards. And I think that the idea of having, you know, whoever gets the most at-large votes is a great idea, and you can opt to want to run for president. It can be a separate box, something like that. But as it stands right now, I don't think that this resolution would be good for the assembly.
30 seconds.
Sure. Well, last year, Kwame and I, for people on the assembly, we had a little bit of trouble with the parliamentary procedure. I think it comes with time. I think the idea of making qualifications for any political candidate for office is a very, some would call it dangerous, others would call it a bold step. But there are
seconds.
Vince and I are encouraging, if anybody has any amendments, we invite you to bring those forward. This has to be voted on today.
Speaker's time is expired, Mr. Greenberg.
I think we should support the resolution, and I know that in the executive board, the last semester executive board member Stephen Murphy can't vote, and also with David Sparks and Spencer. This is actually something we talked about potentially wanting to do. We present the online funding results, and then a couple of resolutions and questions brought before us about what our plan is for the
everyone jumped on this. I mean, the reality of it is, we have a couple of seniors there. We're not going to be another reality is that the individuals that are still here.
So, point of information, this resolution will not go into effect until the 2008-2009 school year, so it won't affect juniors either. Continue.
Or juniors, right. Okay. But I think that it is important, especially for the individuals that are going to be in positions in the future, that there's never any doubt about their legitimacy in this position. And I think, for personal experience, I can say that I don't have any problem with people disagreeing with my opinion, actions, things like that. But what really bothers me is then when people take it one step further and question the legitimacy of the body which you serve on, the legitimacy of the position that you hold, and how you got there, even if at the time it was a fair process. And I think that to move in the right direction and establish more legitimacy for your position, give the SA that institutional fit, so give the SA the opportunity for people to take the system like you've moved world before. I think that this is something that we have to do. I think it's long overdue. I suppose my only regret is that I wasn't one of the ones that didn't write the resolution, but even so, I support everybody here, or I urge everybody here rather, to support this resolution, get it passed today, don't pass it on to another week.
We would actually invite. I think that was incredibly eloquent. I think it was incredibly brilliant. We would like to make Alon co-sponsor, if he wouldn't mind.
Yes.
Alon Kramer is a co-sponsor.
The clerk could note that. Okay. Parliamentarian Maza.
Most of what I was going to say, so let me put this in hopefully a different light.
It'll be repetitive.
Yeah. You said that self-selecting is a cornerstone of this. Self-selecting doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good leader. I can think I'm going to be a good president, but it might not work out that way. So you need requirements on this, and you say that you should have requirements in public office. Because this is the spokesman of the SA, talking to us, I'm talking to President Scorton, you need experience. And you have, again, the most experienced leaders on the SA actually running for this, and then start precluding them from the SA. Yes, they're taking risks, but it's also damaging the SA, because we're losing experienced people in their senior year, most likely. And so you'll just have a drop off at the end of this. So I think it's good to hear. I don't know how to fix this.
1 minute left.
There is one big requirement that is getting elected. And the students, you have to trust them. Okay, we're an Ivy League institution. And for our United States government, the only requirement for presidents is age and citizenship. And if we can't trust the
voters,
trust all presidency and Ivy League students.
But with voter turnout as low as it is, it's entirely possible to run a grassroots campaign among your friends in your house or your fraternity or sorority, anything like that, and get elected without any legislative experience at all. It's very easy to get elected to a position if you know the right people at Cornell with such a small voter turnout.
Is the internal elections process a step up from that?
It's an interesting point. But we know, everyone in the SA knows that they have legislative experience, respect, and the SA would not nominate someone.
I have your experience in an elected journalist.
Speaker's time is expired. Guy, can you give us the first community member?
Javis Delgio, class 2008.
Come on forward. Take 2 minutes.
Hello, my name is Jada Filippio, and I'm a senior in the School of IR. And it is common knowledge, or it should be, that individuals tend to hold their president and their vice president to different standards. These individuals are not just members of IR, they are leaders and doers. Their tasks are different, and their expectations, or the expectations we have of them, are high. Presidents are supposed to be visionaries. Someone whose vision and foresight leads the SA to important decisions and resolutions. Having a president whose vision and foresight has never been questioned by the larger population is troubling to me. Having a president whose ability to effectively lead and serve as president has not been scrutinized, analyzed, or questioned by the general Cornell population is also troubling to me. What's more, I am also sure that this is a troubling thought to many of my Cornell peers. Not only does it imply the Cornell election system is undemocratic,
But more importantly, it implies that the student body cannot be entrusted with the decision to choose and elect their very own president. We all know that this is untrue. If the student body cannot be entrusted with electing the right individual for president, then it must also be true that these same individuals lack the ability to properly elect at-large seats or school-based seats, such as your own. Not only will electing a president increase student participation, it will also allow issues of the community to surface. And when a candidate is running specifically for a seat of leadership, he or she will be compelled to speak with the students, hear their issues, and develop a platform to address them. We elect people to the SA based on what we think they can do for our respective communities, be they minorities, LGBTQ, or underrepresented. Why are we denied the ability to elect a president to speak to university-wide issues? I stand here to say that my president should be elected by my vote. Any other policy increases the power
Speaker
of the
time SA has expired.
At the expense of undermining
Vice
the
President Lamon.
Yep. Thank you. I want to echo a lot of the sentiment that's been said. I also wanted to see this resolution passed today, but just like you said that the president is often not scrutinized enough. I think CJ's had his fair share of adjectives thrown at him. It's called a dope sleeve vote. But anyway, I'm totally behind this, but I do want to say, I want to give an example, and it's the sentiment that's been expressed by Representative Stein and others about, the losing candidate for president having then no chance to be on the assembly. I could see potentially a situation where the losing candidate for president, the number of votes that he has actually could be more than some of the winning at-large seats. I'm just thinking that would be a terrible situation that, there wouldn't be anything to do after the fact, but just with our voting procedures, you don't have to vote for four people and then for the other. Some people can just go on and vote for the president and not in the at-large. I'm just saying that would be a situation where I think a lot of undergraduates would feel frustrated. And I do hope that there's an amendment coming. I know people are writing. And on that note, I want to yield my time to Vice President Gay.
Thanks, Ryan. I have
a minute left.
Curiously. If the one amendment that I would like to discuss is I would move that we amend this to read strike the bolded portion on the first page. So in addition, 8 voting members will be elected at large by and from university undergraduates to the population of the whole period. A candidate for any seat can additionally indicate their intent to run for either president or EVP. The president and EVP candidates receiving the highest vote totals will be seated in those designated seats. With that amendment, that would effectively allow anybody from any seat, they could still attempt to represent their own constituency while running for the president EVP, so there would be a separate portion of the ballot which would say that. And this would take care of the question. So likely if there were more, generally you don't have more than 2 or 3 people running for each seat. So optimally, this would address that concern. Somebody can still represent their own constituency, and the 2 highest socials will be allowed to represent the at-large.
Yes.
Are you allowed to move to amend under yield of time? My understanding is you're only allowed to amend it to original time.
Guy?
Can you give me an original subject?
Yes, sir.
Can he amend it? Yes. Can he amend the resolution? I'm going to allow it. If someone disagrees with me, they can overrule me. there's been an amendment to the amendment, I guess. It's going to read, a candidate for any seat can and additionally indicate their intent for running for either president or EVP. The president and EVP candidates receiving the highest vote total will be seated in the designated seat. Is there a second to the amendment?
Second.
Can you do that again? It's exactly what it's going to.
There's chicken scratch.
Yeah. I apologize.
It's okay. And Liz, can you make sure you get this amendment? Okay. Say it slowly. Go ahead.
A candidate for any seat can additionally indicate their intent to run for president or EVP. President and EVP candidates receiving the highest vote totals will be seated in those designated seats. And the intent of this, the intent of this would be to allow for those people to be seated there, the second highest vote totals, if they're having to be filled in their own constituency, like hotel, cals, whatever. those would be the people seated, and or if it was that large, they're running at large, and the next size would also be seated at large, and these people would be filled with designated two seats.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent?
Dissent.
We are vice. Afan, do you want to speak about your dissent, and then we'll open up a speaker's list.
I'm not understanding how the amendment would logistically work. So we have people running for a cab seat and then running for this.
Okay. We are now forming a speaker's list. Ahmed, I assume you'd like to be on it. Mazak, I have you. Okay.
Asim.
Sure. Yeah, you're fourth on the list, actually. Arjun is first.
Yeah, thank you. I was just seriously writing the exact same thing pretty much. I would like to add to that, though, that if no candidate running for president is successful, then an internal election will determine president and executive vice president. So I want to amend that amendment as such, just to take out the lack of clarity there.
I don't
restate what you're amending.
Okay, so if, say, for example...
in words that we can put in the charter.
Oh. If no candidate running for president is successful,
hold on. If no candidate,
can I, Arjun? But that's not the intent. That's not the intent. There's going to be a successful candidate if anybody runs.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Like you run the
post-election. Yeah. I know. Order. He can amend the amendment to the amendment.
I'm saying you do.
That makes any sense. Go ahead, Arjun. Order, please.
If no candidate running for president is successful in their bid for a representative seat, then an internal election among the 23 successful representatives will determine the president and executive vice president. This way,
okay. Now you've stopped with the amendment, right? Okay. Read it again so the clerk so we can get it. If no candidate running for president in their bid,
if you lose, for
successful in their bid for a seat on the assembly, then an internal election among the 23 successful representatives
would be the council.
You got that?
That's why this is common. You're effectively running for two positions.
Okay.
Or not 23.
It's 19, right. 19, well, I corrected him.
Could I make
no. Anyway, just to defend it. It's such
no, you're not defending it. You made the amendment. If no candidate running for president is successful in their bid, an internal president or EVP, an internal election with the 19 representatives will occur.
Yes.
Correct? Okay. Is there a second to the amendment?
Point of procedure.
Yes, Mark.
This is an amendment of an amendment?
Yes.
Correct. Point of
permission. Yes.
To go through the speakers?
We're opening up a brand new speakers list to discuss this. Is there a second to the amendment?
Wait, I have a point of order. I don't believe you can make an amendment to an amendment unless the original amendment is passed, because that's still pending. That's still pending. Like, that is an amendment we haven't discussed it and or voted on it, so it's not even really there until we pass it, so we can't add anything or change anything to it at this point unless that's done.
That's
what you've done after this pending procedure is done.
All right, fine. Let's continue speaking on. I'm not going to accept the motion, Arjun. We can come back to that. Thank you, Mazdaq, for informing me on that. We're going to continue with the discussion on the amendment. The first one proposed by Vice President Gay. Second on the speaker's list is Mazdaq.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the question out of this in a second, because I'm still sort of grasping the concept. But the only thing I wanted to say was that, and this is what I've preached all along, is that I think that we should be wary of how much you put into the charter, because we're just making the charter lengthier and lengthier. I feel that if we want to put in the charter that we're going to have two at-large seats, the candidate seats, office of president, and VP, that's great. And then any other sort of logistics should go into the election rules determined by the elections committee that year and approved by the student assembly. My only concern is putting that set into the charter. The charter is supposed to be adopted, so it can't come to time. So those kind of logistics or specifics could change year to year. I mean, as the point of argument was brought up, there's different opinions on how this should be done. What Adam proposed may not exactly work out, and what Arjun's
1 minute.
That is sort of the proof that there might be different opinions or there might be different circumstances that require a different interpretation or different logistics of how elections need to be run. So I guess my question to Adam is, where exactly is your amendment going? And the second part of this that I'm not understanding. So anyone from any
seconds
eligible to take the privacy DP funds at the highest level, how would that be determined?
20 seconds.
My intent was that you wouldn't necessarily have to win your own seat you're running for. There'd be, anybody could effectively run for two seats, run for your own seat, and then effectively run for president of UP. So there'd be six at large seats, and then two specifically reserved, designated seats for president of UP. So then the second hike, if you happen to win both the hotel seat and the president
seat. Extend the speaker's time by 30 seconds.
Thank you. You would, the second place vote, the second place signalized vote total in hotel would assume that seat, and the highest vote total in the presidency would assume that seat. So you're effectively running twice.
Sorry, I got it.
Okay. So that's why RJ's amendment doesn't really fit.
Sure.
That doesn't make
sure. And so the only thing that is one, I don't think that logistics should be in the charter. And two, I think the only problem you have is why doesn't everyone just check one for president? I mean, if I'm going to get the highest number of votes, might as well have 19 people running.
Well, that's the same as internal election.
The speaker's time has expired. The time now is 6:34 p.m. The scheduled time for the meeting is to end at 6:30. Vice President Lavin has motioned to extend the meeting time until 7 o'clock. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Meeting time has been extended until 7 p.m. Next on the speaker's list is Representative McGovern.
I mean, I would just say I still don't even totally understand, and I'm wondering how people who are actually going to be voting are really going to understand as well as, like, we're discussing it right now for, like, 15 minutes, and, like, it's not totally clear to everyone, so I'm against the amendment. And also, I think there's something to be said about placing that importance on the president and vice president seat. I mean, that's what's going to get people excited, and what Representative Asbury said, I think, is also a good point. Why not everyone? Why wouldn't everyone just put, like, oh, maybe I'll be president, so, like, I'll just put it on my slot or whatever. You know, I still can't even imagine, like, physically what you're talking about would look like, but why wouldn't I just also run for president? I think we need to give some legitimacy and importance to the president and VP offices, and that can only be accomplished, one, by striking this amendment down, and two, giving those two positions a lot of weight. And I yield my time to the chair.
There was 10 seconds left. Ackman.
I want to say that going after the fact that, again, anyone with this, there's really no incentive for someone to run just to run for the positions of president and VP. We would go against the spirit of the resolution. Everyone could just check their name, and, you know, if they happen to get the highest vote getter, they would just become president or VP. And, you know, that's just an added, sweet thing to their, you know, to their. Activities, but I think that it should be a choice to run. I think that people are afraid of the risk of someone losing and not being able to continue, but I think the presence of that risk, just like in anywhere else, the presence of that risk is what makes the position important. The presence of that risk is what makes people who actually want to run for president, as opposed to just run for president as a second choice. You know, I'll run for Cal, but I'll also run for president. If I actually get one, I'll just do it. I think that we should consider that. We've got a call to question on the amendment.
Second.
What was the motion?
Call to question on the amendment.
There's been a call to question on the amendment. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent?
Dissent.
Representative Craig.
I've been trying to wait until I'm on the speaker's list to at least speak about this amendment, and I think we should at least, I know I'm on there. And let other people speak about it before we immediately shut it down.
Okay. All in favor of calling the question? Representative Salins withdrawn his motion. Representative Craig.
Sorry about that.
Can you keep time for two?
Water stone. Okay. Wish Adam was here, maybe he could respond a little bit more about the amendment. The way I was envisioning the amendment would be specifically for that large seat. I'm not sure I quite agree with having the highest vote. Again, I'm not sure how that would work. But if we envision it as the president is over the entire university, as such, that large seats are over the entire university. It should not just be a policy or something of that nature. In that same term, if we had 8 at-large seats, technically we could say, if you're running for one of these seats, you're technically running for president. The highest vote bidder in my amendment, which I was writing before I actually proposed it, was saying that we, specifically the at-large seats, are the president and the vice president seats. That way we say to people who fit some concerns that, oh, I'm not just going to run for president today. You still have to get the most votes from the entire university, not just from human ecology, not just from hotel and so forth. So I think when we're talking about that,
if people really want to run for president, in a sense, and people vote for them, by making an amendment on those terms, I'm trying to put this in words, the people that the university selects will the most vote, the highest majority, will get those seats. I envision with this amendment at the same time that the people who do not win the president and vice president, the next six on that list, will get the student assembly seats at large seats. I think we can
work with
the amendment and then think about it at the outset.
Representative Wang.
So, thank you guys for this resolution. I definitely have to disagree with one of the representatives regarding the amendment.
We are speaking about the resolution, not about the amendment, not
yeah,
the resolution. Okay.
So definitely, this, I disagree with the amendment because the fact that if you keep amending this and adding, should the next person should get the seat, the president, like if, for example, the president of the Women's League, they get the vote. It's like saying, the president of the United States, if they don't get the most number of votes, they should, if they're like the losers, the runner-up, they should become like a Senate, a member of the Senate. That's so ridiculous. The Student Assembly is like a legislative body, and with the president and the vice president and the speakerhead. And I definitely have to urge you guys to amend the amendment. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't work. And I think we should just keep with this resolution. It has a lot of good background. It has a good meaning to it, principles to it.
Just on the amendments.
Amendment.
Thank you. Representative Stein.
Yeah, I'd like to call a question on the amendment. I think it's all been said. In fact, I meant to take myself off the speaker's list, so.
Okay. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Dissent, Representative John.
That's a good point.
You're on the speaker's list. Okay. Are you withdrawing?
Sure.
Representative Stein is withdrawing her motion. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Don.
So, yeah, I just wanted to ask something that Asa had just said, and I think this is probably another question for Adam. So, does it mean, if someone wished to run for the president, he or she has to also be running for at-large seats?
Could you actually address your question to ASIC? You had a very good
question.
Are you yielding your time to ASA?
No, maybe ASA can answer.
Okay.
Sure. So as I was just talking with Adam about, right now, as he wrote the amendment, it states that for any seat you can click off, I'm going to run for president. What I was just talking about with Adam was, if we just do it for the at-large seats, at the same time you're running for the whole university, and then the two high procurators out of that large seat will be president and vice president. The next six will be for just your regular at-large seats.
Yeah.
I think that's better.
That's what I was going to say, because technically, if any student can run for president, then they college people have less possibility to win, whereas arts and sciences and health people have more possibility. And also, if you want to run for president, you are to represent the whole student body, so it will be wiser to let at-large seats to run for president. And also, regarding what Ashley has just said, that if we are to approve this amendment, maybe it will release the importance of the presidency.
The speaker's time has expired. I would just like to make a point that if the amendment does pass, it is in contradiction to Article 4, Bylaw 4, Section 1, Part A, which says elections for officers and 2SA voting members to the UA shall be by secret separate ballot. SA voting members may have one vote for each position to be filled, but may not vote for any one individual twice on any ballot. The president may not be one of the representatives of the SA. So I'd ask the sponsors of the resolution, the amendment, to fix that accordingly if this does go past. Yes? It refers to the election of officers. The first speaker's list is empty. Would anyone like to speak for the first time? Representative Sarah.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of people. I don't think this is, a big amendment. I believe it's a valid motion.
Is there any dissent? Seeing none, all in favor, or Adam, would you like to summarize the amendment one more time?
I'd like to actually withdraw the amendment, if I may.
Vice President Kay has withdrawn his amendment. We'll resume the speaker's list. Representative Craig.
So with those terms, I'm going to just cover two questions that I just got.
question again, Michael? Can I ask a question again?
Sure. I was just curious as to how you had people run for two seats.
Okay, so the question was, are you running for two seats? The answer is no. You're running for, are you running for two positions? No, you're running for the at-large seat. But based on the definition.
Who are you addressing your question to?
I'm speaking on the speaker's list.
You have a question.
I just asked for clarification.
Okay. Who, clarification to whom?
Mazdaq.
Why?
Why? Because he asked me. I'm just responding to the question.
Go on.
Okay. So as I was saying, in addition of an amendment that I'm going to be proposing, you're not running for two seats, you're running for an at-large seat. As such, an at-large is over the entire university, and for the highest person that wins the entire university, it only makes sense that person is the president. So you're not running for two seats, you're running for an at-large seat. And if you get the highest vote and you work for that, then you will be president.
30 seconds.
But the next six who don't will not get that seat for president. So with that, I motion to amend the resolution.
How so?
Taking out the underlying portion that is.
On the first part, the first be it therefore resolved. Okay.
Yes. So instead of that underlying bolded portion will say, the two highest vote getters.
Hold on. The two highest vote getters.
Who designate that they wish to be in the running for the president and the vice president.
Who wish to designate that they
who designate that they wish to be in the running.
Who designate that they wish to be in the running.
For president and the vice president.
In the running for VP and president.
Will be named as such, respectively.
President. Vice President shall be named as such respectively.
The following two highest leaders.
Such respectively. Slow reader, sorry. Go ahead.
The following six highest leaders will be named in the at-large seats.
The following six highest vote-getters shall be designated at at-large seats?
Yes.
Representative Craig has proposed an amendment to the resolution, which now states the two highest vote-getters who designate that they wish to be in the running for president and vice president shall be named as such, respectively. The following six highest vote-getters shall be designated at at-large seats. Is that correct? Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Ahmed? We're gonna open up the speaker's list. If you'd like to be on the speaker's list for this amendment, please raise your hand. I see you. Okay. Is your hand up? NASDAQ is first.
Thank you. Thank you for coming from that, but I still, again, with what I think was adding to them, I think it's the logistics that the election committee presents should be in the rules as to how the numbers can play out. I think charter is saying this is under the charter under membership. And all that needs to be in here is that there are two at large seats reserved. If we pass this and want to make this change, there should be two at large seats for the office of the president of the GDP. And the other six doesn't know what's going to happen to them, how that's going to play out. I think that should be reserved for future discussion. It should not be in the charter. Second of all, while I see your point, my concern is that, so you have the eight people running for at large seats, but they know that two of them, one of them is going to be president, one of them is going to be executive vice president, based upon just the highest number of votes, is that right? So they're still going to be saying, well, vote, I mean, if that's the case, if I'm running for at large seat, I'm going to be saying, vote for me for, I want to make sure I'm the best candidate, I'm going to be saying that I want to be your president. I mean, that would be the ideal for anyone. Yes. They would still be running through, they would still be campaigning for more than just their at-large position. And what if you have someone, is there something in there, if someone who's running for at-large does not want to be president or executive vice president, what if they don't want to subject themselves to being on that role in the assembly? I mean, sure, there have been quite a few presidents on the assembly who have been, it's in their first term, but there have been quite a few people who serve as representatives who have not won the internal elections. Because they want to take that sort of seat on the assembly for you to see what it's like, be able to express their opinion, and then move up to a potential leadership position on the assembly. So I feel that we should leave the resolution as it is, we support the idea, pass the resolution, but not make amendments to it that dictate specific logistics, especially given that it's not going to matter until next spring anyway at this point. So if you have the question that next year's elections committee can have at the beginning of the fall,
30 seconds.
Any of the members who are elected at that point on the next year's assembly, they can discuss it. I don't think it's something we should be discussing.
10 seconds.
The logistics of this wording in our charter right now.
In the interest of time, I realize that I have let one speaker go for 2 minutes. I'm going to limit speakers to 1 minute. Guy, Nazar?
If you do this thing with the checkbox and the at-large seats, it's two different positions. President, and then it's at-large. You would have to have every single at-large candidate be a candidate for president, and then whoever got the most votes would want to be president, the second most votes would be executive vice president. If you want to sidestep the whole, you can't run for two positions thing. That is sort of what you were saying, but what if you don't have any of these figures present? What if everyone running for at-large doesn't want to be president, they want to sit on the assembly, and you have zero candidates? That's a big problem. To go back to this whole thing, this resolution...
We're just speaking on the amendment.
Yeah, but I don't know if this is the way to do it.
Okay. Go ahead. All right. Chris, Sarah.
Yeah, I guess just like the judge said, it doesn't seem so different from before when not just, check two boxes, hey, I want your president pump it, you can run. So I guess urge you guys to vote down this amendment and stick to the resolution as it's written. I think I agree with that, I think it's appropriate. Those things can be put into the selection rules or maybe that, but ultimately I think that this amendment goes just right back to what Adam proposed earlier and what was voted down.
Ask him to go.
I find out again, we don't change our United States Constitution with specific things all the time because it's supposed to be a really big, broad thing that committees and legislatures affect. So I would urge everyone to vote down this amendment, and I am going to motion to vote on the amendment. Is that all?
Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will move to a vote on the amendment. The amendment reads, the two highest vote-getters who designate that they wish to be in the running for president and vice president shall be named as such respectively. The following six highest vote-getters shall be designated as at-large.
I'll withdraw my amendment.
I have it. Mazdak. Back to the original speaker's list on the amendment, on the resolution.
Okay. Thank you.
And we're back to 2 minutes for speakers.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to make it as soon as possible. This idea is supposed to be passed, and originally I was against the idea. I think it's best to allow the leadership of the assembly, or my position was, that that's about the leadership of the assembly to come up with expose its head amongst actually some members who are elected. But that being said, I consider different arguments such as is the president and executive, especially the president position, that sort of entry level position that was termed last week. And there have been people who have served as presidents and have been fine presidents who served as an entry level committee. But the biggest problem I've always had with having elections for the executive board, specifically for the president and executive vice president, is that you allow people who hold these college seats to run for that position. The reason it's troubling to me is not to demean the colleges that are running for those seats, but in this case, you have someone, and this is not any offense to whatsoever, but we have a hotel representative as our president, which is fine. I'm sure the speaker would be fine with president, regardless of what his seat designation is. In terms of the constituency that voted him in, he got maybe a couple hundred votes.
128
votes.
I just know.
And there have been stories that I've been talking about after the college, in college my freshman year, that happened to have been at large members, Kwame last year and then Elon earlier this year. And so, to me, I feel like the president and EVP should be elected at large. And the reason I say this, and I think the point that I'm a positive member of the name, but what Javis said is because you want the candidates to debate. You want people to run for president and say what the issues that they want are going to be. You want to know that your president is going to fight for these issues, and if you vote them into office, that's what they're going to advocate as the leader of the assembly, as the face of the assembly. And that concern that Ryan brought about the numbers is wrong, because they will be the at-large representatives, but they will be voted by all the students. And I just ask everyone to try this, like we tried to do this in the past. My opinion is to change, because we don't. We miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. Try it to see how it works. If not, it can be changed back.
Speaker's time has expired. Guy, another speaker from the community.
Ethan Felder, class 2009.
We're going to add Ben Eschenhunter to that.
Hi, guys. I'm Ethan Feldner. I'm 5409. And usually I don't come out to these meetings, but I think this is a very important issue, and I've stuck it out for an hour and a half here, so I might as well put in my opinion. I think this resolution is long overdue, and I commend Representative Hartman for bringing it up. I mean, I think that with the issues of the broadcast screen, I don't think there's really much to those arguments. You have a former SA president supporting the amendment. So in principle, it seems like all of you are supporting it, and I think you definitely should. I think we need to do away with these internal elections in the SA after everyone, after all of the SA members are elected, not only for the good of the body and their and whether they see the election as legitimate, but also for the student assembly institution as itself. From what I've heard, there's a lot of, you know, backroom deals, a lot of drama, there's a lot of personal grudges that come out of it, a lot of internal squabbling, and it really should stop because I think it affects your ability to actually get stuff done on behalf of the student body. So I think that putting it up with the students and letting them decide, you know, you can go through the logistics and figure out what's the easiest way to do it, and the simplest way to do it, which I think is important. But in principle, I think this resolution ought to pass, and I feel strongly about it.
Chris, sir.
Questions about the resolution, the amendment. So I agree with the idea. I just had a question about when and how the elections will happen. I admit it's a stupid question, but is it going to be similar to just like the general election we'll be before, we'll be after? I'm just curious. I guess you just think that we'll fall into the election. I don't apply for next year, but when, like, let's say next year when elections come around, do you have the student assembly elections first, or are they simultaneous elections?
The whole idea for a variety of reasons. One, I'm just telling Vince he's no longer here, but the obviously assemblies, it can be very difficult to work with at times. This fundamentally we wanted to make it very simple, very clear. It would just occur at the exact same time. We just had a presidential election, fundamentally at the same time.
I would suggest that maybe we could put a thread on just to see what people feel.
30 seconds.
I'd like to call a question on the resolution.
There's been a call to question on the resolution. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will move to a vote. Mark and Vince, go ahead. Take 2 minutes, and then we'll speak to the community members that were on our list but didn't get a chance.
Sure. I think fundamentally, I think everybody understands the amendment. We've taken hard, we've spoken positively. The only thing I would say was yesterday, the fact that the Senate counts made a very important decision, really beneficial to the students. Let's follow that up today. Let's do one for the SA. Let's get a conversation out there.
Guy, who's on the speaker's list from?
Alex Tabor, class 2008.
Hi, I'm Alex Tabor,
class 2008.
I'm going to limit speakers to 1 minute.
I've never spoken that out to somebody in
the welcome.
But I would like to welcome all the illustrious members of Federal Ballot. Sorry, I mean Quill and Dagger.
What
I'm very sympathetic to MADVAC and Ashley's concerns about having a broad charter. Bylaws and a number of things, as I understand them in general procedure, are for specific changes. And I think that passing this now as a broad charter amendment is very important. The more you debate amendments, the farther you get from transparency, which is the first step towards a reputable reputation on campus. If you have, you can hammer out the details later, as I understand it, you'll have over a year to make bylaw amendments and make other charter amendments. Pass it now as a step towards real student empowerment and real transparency to give a real air of legitimacy to this institution that I know in my years at Cornell it seems to have.
10 seconds.
And it will empower students to want to be involved with the process. And when they see that changes have been made, perhaps come to more meetings like this without more specific.
The speaker's time has expired. Thank you.
Yeah. Can we theoretically adjust this afterwards? Can we adjust, sort of.
If this goes into the charter, it goes into effect, yes. if we do not vote on, well, we're voting on this anyway now. But yes, we can go back in and change the charter accordingly.
Well, no, I think.
I think what?
I'd make another point for that. I think what she was saying was, can this be structured more within our election rules? Like, can we?
Right. I mean, I know that those are very.
Right. That's something that the elections committee will work on to implement. The director of elections. Parliamentarian Mazza has a point of information.
Okay. If we vote this in today, we are immediately in violation of our charter. I do not have motion granting. I have no special thing for being parliamentarian.
Can you explain how we're in violation of the charter?
Why
he has a point of information. He's a parliamentarian. He's being recognized by the chair.
Okay. So if any charter amendment goes into effect immediately, so if we put this into the charter from now on, it works. So this election that we're holding right now would technically be in violation of our charter. So, I mean, may I suggest something to fix this?
I mean,
if someone would make a motion to say that the elections of the vice president, of the executive vice president, and the president are subject to the election rules as set forward by the Office of the Assemblies, we can work on this later. Because if we don't vote this today, the resolution will go away because it's been 2 days or 2 meetings since it's been introduced. So if we vote on it now, we're in violation. But we can sidestep it, say it's subject to the rules of the Office of the Assemblies and their election rules.
We've already moved to question.
All right, well, then vote it down if you want to do that.
Okay. Now we're not in opinion.
Fundamentally, respond to the director of elections with the logistical.
Yeah, Mark, take 30 seconds and respond to that.
Yeah, well, the election tactics for this election have already gone out.
Right.
So fundamentally, the election began under the previous charter, and the election would have fallen through as it was when it began. The packets have already gone out. People have already seen it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But then this election is automatically in violation of the charter.
It's not, but fundamentally,
I know it's
not
the
same.
I'm saying that the timing is
okay.
I have this point of information to the chair.
Yes.
Has there not been, I mean, obviously we want to avoid as many violations to our charter as we can, but has there not been cases in the past where if we pass something, we've done it with sort of a conditional understanding of when it's going to happen? I mean, I don't think that, to be honest, I think it would be detrimental over a little, whatever guys point out, whatever you call that, that you throw this down just before the start of this election, and we know this is going to go into effect next year. I mean, it's obviously not going to go back to change anything this year.
That's understood. And we can, I guess we could go back into the standing rules and change that. The standing rules don't need 2 weeks to be changed, so we can change that next week if it does pass, and then we can be more articulate on the wording.
Wait, point of information, we can't change this within a specific.
You can change it. If it's voted upon and it's approved, it goes into the charter. The question here is whether or not the upcoming election's in violation of the charter with these changes. But if we next week change the standing rules to kind of articulate that these rules won't go into effect until next year, I think that would be fine. Actually, I don't think. But.
Can we override the move to vote and then just make the change?
No. Next speaker from the community.
We're going to hear from Ben.
Welcome. Name and year for the record, please.
Members of the assembly.
Sorry, I just wanted to address the
yeah.
For the
You can stand up and do it if you want.
This is my first time here. I just wanted to speak to members of the assembly, and with all respect to individuals that drafted this resolution, I don't understand the premise of the resolution of giving the entire student body the opportunity to elect the SA president. I feel that it's more the responsibility of the assembly to elect your executive board. I don't really understand how this is going to turn into a popularity contest. Obviously, the members of the assembly are much more aware of who the qualified candidates for president and executive vice president would be.
30 seconds.
And the rest of the executive board. I'm just challenging the premise of the entire resolution, and I would just like I'd like to understand why exactly you want this resolution to go through.
Point of information to the chair.
Yes.
Did the speaker submit any data proving that the student assembly members are more qualified than the student body to select their president?
He did not.
So that's an opinion, not a fact. I'll just have to tell you.
Very well. That the speakers list has been exhausted. We will now move to a vote. If I'm reading the charter correctly, Mark, I remember you saying that because we have 21 representatives instead of 23, there's a stipulation that the charter, the voting, SA voting members is redefined as 21. However, I can't find that in the charter. Can you point that out to me?
Fundamentally, since there are 21 sitting members, I believe it says the voting members of the assembly. There are 21 voting members of the assembly.
Article 3 of the charter says the SA will consist of 23 voting members who are registered undergraduate students at Cornell University. Article 2.2 says under no circumstances will this charter be amended without the consent of two-thirds of the voting members of the SA. So...
Well, no, that was just... I was just trying to be helpful since the seats were vacated.
They are vacated, and in past precedents we haven't let the charter be amended. I mean, it can be amended, but it needs 16. No, we didn't. I can point to my last year when Sarah Boxer tried to put the SAFC changes on, the vote went through as passed with only 19 representatives before the freshmen were seated, and we approved it, but then we had to go back and change that in the... Pardon?
The freshman seats weren't vacant seats, CJ. We're talking about the seats right now are vacant. The freshman seats were just not elected yet.
Vacant seats don't have the option to cast votes.
Vacant seats can't count for it.
All right, fine. This resolution is a change to the charter and requires 14 votes, unless someone disagrees with me, and then we can go back and motion open enrollment. We're going to do a roll call vote. Would the clerk please call the roll?
That's Tim.
Yes.
Fred.
Pass.
John.
Yes.
Greenberg.
Yes.
Gay.
Pass.
Harmon.
Yes.
Lavin.
Stand.
Brad.
Pass.
Sorry.
He passed.
Pass.
Matthew.
Yes.
Southern.
Yes.
Matt Robinson.
Yes.
Gabriel.
Pass.
No.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Craig.
Yes.
Gay.
Abstain.
Lattice.
Yes.
Gabriel.
Yes.
And Carly Miller Proxy, yes. By a vote of 15-1-3, the resolution passes. Very quickly, the next item on business of the day, resolution 13, in support of Cornell's new financial aid policy, sponsored by Representatives Asbury, Basil Coombs, Craig Adon, Gay Greenberg, Hartman, Lavin, Lessig, Matthews, McGovern, Miller, Natarajan, Salem, Sarah, Smith, Stein, and Wayne. I haven't sponsored it.
The call for acclamation.
Oh.
Call for acclamation.
Second. It's been a call for acclamation. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Resolution passes.
A motion to go into executive session.
There's a motion to go into executive session.
Second.
It's been seconded. The assembly is now moving to executive session. All non-voting members must leave the room at this time. Thank you for coming. We appreciate the interest and the support.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.